You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, May 12th, 2010. This is episode 131. How's your website looking? It's time again for the Wells Tech Podcast. Joining me as usual, Sally Draper. My name is Martin Spriggs. Good morning, Sally.
Hey, Martin, and welcome to graduation festivities. This is the week when you get to travel to New Ulm and be a part of call day and graduation there at Martin Luther College.
A lot of excited students, I think, this week and next, right? You went through
Absolutely.
That not too long ago.
Yeah, it's nothing like that anticipation of your first call. It's very exciting.
Yep. So, what was going through your head when you heard Sleepy Eye, Minnesota? Did you know where Sleepy Eye was?
We did, because we had been at Martin Luther College, which is just 15 minutes down the road from us.
And, right.
We thought buttered corn, actually, because that's what Sleepy Eye is famous for, is big buttered corn days festivities. So we knew just where we were going and what to expect here.
Okay. I'm sorry, I interrupted you before you say something.
Well, I was just going to say I had a wonderful Mother's Day, because a group of about 40 nice-looking young men showed up to serenade me on Mother's Day.
Is that right?
Hosted the seminary choir here at St. John's yesterday, and what a treat that was. So coming off a great weekend here in Sleepy Eye.
Yeah, we were just commenting how those guys look younger and younger every year.
It's amazing. They do look like babies, but they're all excited about call day as well, and I guess you'll be covering that one in a week and a half. Huh?
Yep, we're doing live streaming. We're going to do, up at New Ulm, we will do call service and graduation. I think graduation is at 10 and the call service is at 2 if it follows the normal schedule. And the night before would be the concert, which MLC is actually streaming, because I think that is held in their brand new chapel. So that'll be fun. That's always a great event, and I enjoy going up there for that. And then I think the following week, I want to say, is seminary call day,
right.
Vicar call day, senior call day, graduation, concert, all kinds of festivities. So big time in the Synod.
Definitely, and we will make sure and include links to all those streaming websites so that if you can't be there in person, you can certainly join in the excitement via the Internet.
Via the Internet, the wonders of the Internet.
That's right.
Speaking of the Internet, no secret, that's what this show, much of what this show is about. And our topic for the day is how churches can leverage the, churches and schools, I should say, can leverage the Internet using their website. So I guess I do a lot of workshops on reaching, what I call reaching out in a digital world, and I still tell everybody that I present to, is I believe that websites are still, should be the centerpiece of the digital strategies of any congregation. That's still an important part of what congregations should be thinking about and should be doing, because I believe that is where visitors or potential visitors would go first before they step foot on the campus of the church or school, just to learn a little bit more about what they might be getting into.
Right. I think if we look back just as recently as 5 or 10 years ago, that certainly wasn't the case. But our world has definitely shifted to online shopping, and that includes online shopping for church. And maybe they are just trying to get a feel of what your congregation is like and what the ministry is that you're doing there in your congregation. But taking a look at your website is a very natural first step for people to do when they are looking for a new congregation.
Mm-hmm. So what we'd like to talk about specifically today is web design, not necessarily the content side, but how does it look, and what you should pay attention to as you're thinking about kind of the look and feel of of your website. So we've kind of collected a number of resources that we'd like to share and focus on a couple of different technologies that you may want to get smart on if you're thinking about sprucing up the look and the feel of your website, all the way from, you know, the code behind the presentation side, which is CSS in large part, all the way down to stock photography and editors, you know, editing images, which is obviously a big part, color matching, all those kinds of things I think are important to design. So maybe one place we could start is the fact that I've shared a paper that I wrote. We call it, what do we call that? Missions and websites, or websites and missions, or something like that. Let me double check here.
Yep, I see websites and missions.
Websites and missions, yep. Well, the Home Missions Group, the Board for Home Missions, asked me to craft this a while back, probably a year or so ago now. So I was happy to do that, put together my thoughts and some of the things that we've actually talked about on this podcast over the last couple years, put it all into one handy PDF. So if you go to wellstechwiki.wells.net and look at the church websites section, you'll see it as an attachment there. We'll also put a link to it in the show notes. But it's about 24 pages long of different considerations when you're thinking about a website. And one of those sections is a kind of a do's and don'ts section. I call it 20 guidelines for evangelistic websites. Now, I should probably note that as we look at this document, that this was really written from the perspective that you're going to use your website as an evangelistic tool, as an outreach tool. So most of the recommendations there come from that perspective. You know, if you're going to use your tool to reach out, what kinds of considerations would you have? You know, things like, you know, not mixing internal and external communication. So keeping the communications very crisp and clear and focused, you know, on your target audience. Those kinds of things here. So we're not going to go through this document per se. We've talked about it a little bit in the past, but one of them is be careful in your color selections. Be a student of color, which is kind of a nice segue into some of the tools that are available to help the color challenged, like myself.
You are color challenged, Tom Martin.
I am.
I think one of the great tools that we wanted to make sure we pointed out today was a website from Adobe Color with an odd web spelling, K-U-L-E-R, .adobe.com. And this is one we like to recommend because it has a really nice feature where you can upload your own logo, and it will produce a color palette to go along with that logo. So if you're doing design on your website and you want to find complementary colors that go with your church or school logo, this is a great starting point, this color.adobe.com. And we'll make sure we have a link to that in the show notes.
Yep, so when you're doing your website and you want to base it on a theme, you might as well base it on something that's going to complement an existing logo or a new logo that you're creating, because that's your identity. So you'd want your not just your print materials, but also your web presence to match that. But maybe you're just kind of thinking about reinventing, you know, the look and feel of the church. A lot of churches are doing that these days. Some of the churches haven't really developed logos, but they're in the business of that. And there are great idea sites out there for that as well. One magazine that I really enjoy reading, and it talks about, it's really for church creatives, people in the congregation or working for the congregation who are thinking about, you know, the identity of the church. And that's Collide Magazine. I think that's even been a pick of mine previously. Collidemagazine.com is the website, but I subscribe to the print version as well, where they'll often have features on church design. They'll look at different churches and their web designs. They'll talk about church logos and logo design, all those kinds of things in this magazine. So probably worth a look, Collidemagazine.com.
And there's also a couple of websites that we can point people to that have samples of well-done church websites. Church Beauty and Ministry CSS both have loads of examples of very well-designed church websites. And I'm looking at churchbeauty.com right now, and one that I picked out is called The Chapel. or chapel.org. And it's very simple and straightforward, has a really pleasing color palette to it, simple logo, and get a lot of information with a lot of simplicity on the page, which is a good design mantra these days, to keep it simple. And so, you know, you may or may not like chapel.org, but by just exploring a lot of these sample sites that are out there and linked to on these two pages, you're able to develop your own style and your own feel for what you want on your own page.
I think that's a great idea. There's no the hardest thing, I believe, in design is starting with that blank canvas and wondering, what should this look like, or how should things be put together? So taking a look at what other organizations have done is a great start at, you know, at least sometimes even determining what you don't want, you know, what you don't feel is a good fit for your church or your school or your organization, and kind of thinking through very intentionally what's best. What do I like about this? What don't I like about this? And then pick and choose the different components. And sometimes some of these sites are just more inspirational. They'll suggest an idea that you'll take and run with and implement in your congregation. That's kind of the process that we went through, Sally, when we speak with Final Web about developing new templates. We pick a couple sites and we say, you know, I like this part of this website and I like that part of that website. And that's kind of what we did with a new template that's just being rolled out that some of our congregations probably would really enjoy. And what we did there was we picked a website that I really kind of liked, and maybe I think was even suggested in Collide Magazine, Second Presbyterian Church, which is 2pc.org. And we kind of mixed and matched that with Wells.net, which was of our own design. And we went to Final Web and said, you know, we'd like to kind of marry these two designs together somehow and give our churches a brand new template, which is what we've done. And you can kind of get a sense. It's not rolled out quite yet, but it's very close. But you can see a couple of our test congregations that are using it. One is Good Shepherds in West Allis, goodshepherds.net. You can see that they've rolled that out to the most part. It's kind of still in beta, but you can get a really good idea of what the template looks like based on what they've done there. So I think that will be that'll be a template that'll be real popular, I think, Sally.
And just, Martin, taking a step back for the listeners that aren't familiar with Final Web, that's our Synod web hosting solution. We've partnered with a company. They're actually out in California, but have worked real closely with us over the last, probably 4 years now that we've been working with them. And over 450 to 500 Wells congregations, schools, and other organizations are using it for their web hosting solution. And one of the things that comes along with a Final Web website comes along for the ride are their professionally designed templates. Right. And they're very simple to have a website up and running and looking really professional really quickly. And I think one of the things that we wanted to address as we were developing new templates with Final Web was giving people a wider work area, because some of the Final Web templates tended to be designed for smaller screen resolutions. And more and more people are going to wider screen resolutions. And as you look at some of the trending websites across the web, you'll see that most things are designed for at least 1024 pixel width on the screen. And so that was one of the exciting things I think we accomplished with these new templates. And Good Shepherds is a great example of the new one. Went a different direction and designed a second new template with Final Web that's kind of based on a really wide top bar area, just a wide open content area below that. And we have an example of that on my website, St. John's here in Sleepy Eye. We've developed one with that beta template. And so we actually have two templates that will be new for Final Web customers in the coming months. And it's exciting to get to kind of unveil those to our Wells Tech listeners first.
Yep, choice is always good. And I hear a lot, those people that use Final Web, that, you know, a lot of the templates kind of look alike, which I don't think is a real bad thing. since you're really not in competition with another Wells church. You just want to be distinctive enough. And the important part is, does the visual design allow you the ability to communicate the message that you want in the way that you want to communicate it? So those are all things to look at. One thing, as you were talking, Sally, that came to mind that we should probably share as well is that when you're talking about these larger screen resolutions, you always have to keep in mind the growing market of mobile browsers that are out there as well. That's the next wave of web surfing. And one piece of good news that I heard coming out of Final Web recently was that they're going to make all of their sites mobile-friendly, so that when you visit them, you'll be able to view them with some kind of fidelity, but not be so loaded down with all the stuff that's on there that you'll lose something or that you won't be able to download it. So that's coming as well. And then maybe an important part of kind of an inevitable part of good web design is the technology behind it. And anybody who has done any work with HTML recently, especially when you're dealing with some of these content management systems that we've been talking about, like Final Web or others, is you have to know CSS. CSS is basically the language. It's like HTML that allows you to design a page via code. It's like a style sheet. It stands for cascading style sheets, but it's simply a markup language that allows you to implement a design in a reusable way and a way that you can make global changes across your site with a simple piece of code.
Now, it's kind of that magic behind the template concept that you can apply,
right?
A design to an entire site in one fell swoop, mm-hmm. with a cascading style sheet. That's what's the engine behind that.
Right. And it's not overly difficult to learn, although you have to, I think you do have to spend some time getting comfortable with it. And one direction that Final Web is going is making everything CSS editable so that you can really tweak your design as you move forward. But almost any site, if you work in Drupal, and as we'll hear later in our interview with Perry Lund, Joomla, CSS is really the way to tweak the design as opposed to hand-coding HTML. You work with the CSS. And there are some good editors out there, and we'll put a couple links in the show notes. I found a couple of good lists, one called the 8 Best Free CSS Editors. Most of those are Windows-based, but I also found a nice list for best editors for Mac that simplify it somewhat. You still can't get around the fact that you need to know how to code CSS, but some of these editors give you some nice WYSIWYG tools that allow you to see very immediately how your changes or your edits in the CSS have affected your design. And there's all kinds of good training tools as well. There's a good CSS tutorial that we'll put a link to in the show notes. And the good folks at lynda.com have some nice screencasts. We've talked about lynda.com in the past, lynda.com, about designing CSS.
Lynda is definitely the standard in internet training, for mm-hmm. sure. And I think, not to scare people away, but CSS is a good thing to wrap your brain around, even if you are going to use some of the standard templates that are out there, because no matter how good a template is, it's nice to be able to tweak it to your specifications. So maybe you just want to move the comments link from the bottom of the page to the top of the page. Well, that's going to be a style sheet edit there, and yep. and being able to make your way through the style sheets without being too intimidated is always a good thing.
So know your CSS. That's probably the language of web designers today. Good web design is using CSS. All right. Well, one design that we kind of stumbled on and really enjoyed, and I forgot how we came across Grace Evangelical Lutheran Church's website, which is where Perry Lund is, but it was something that was very visually compelling and appealing, and so we thought we would talk to the creator of that website, grace-wells.org, we noticed that it was a Joomla site, and we hadn't talked to a Joomla developer before. And it just so happens that one of our longtime listeners, Perry Lund, is in the business of developing websites, and they I think they specialize in Joomla sites, and you can see kind of the power of templates in their website. So let's listen as we talk with Perry about their website at Grace. We're very pleased to have joining us today longtime listener Perry Lund from Oskaloosa, Iowa. Good morning, Perry. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well, thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. And so where is Oskaloosa, Iowa?
Oskaloosa, Iowa is in southeast Iowa. We're about 60 miles southeast of Des Moines on a four-lane highway. So we're right on a major highway.
You made sure to get that four-lane highway thing in there. Assuring our listeners you're not in the boonies someplace.
Yeah, not too far off the beaten path.
Okay. I have memories of picking up my daughter in, I think she was at Ames, Iowa, at the youth rally that was out there a number of years back, and getting hopelessly lost and wound up on some dirt road that I couldn't get off of. There were corn stalks on either side of me for miles, and I didn't know what color my car was after I got done with that road.
Must have been the days before GPS technology.
That was, yes.
Yeah.
Yep. So those are my memories of Iowa. But anyway, we're really happy to have you. And what we thought we would do, we kind of stumbled across your website, your congregation's website, grace-wells.org, noticed in a little bit closer inspection that it looked like it was a Joomla site. So we thought, well, we haven't talked to a real live Joomla web. I assume you're the webmaster, kind of behind the scenes worker bee of grace-wells.org. So thought it'd be good to have you on the show. Maybe before we get into your Joomla site, tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, and some of your responsibilities there in the congregation. And also, I don't know how long you've been listening to the Wells Tech podcast. It seems like a long time, at least in podcast years.
In podcast years. I'm not sure if I started listening right at the beginning, which you guys have been on, a couple of years, I think, now.
Right. Sally?
Probably joined you probably within a few months of when you started. Mm-hmm. So I guess you could call me a longtime listener. My background is really went to school to be an educator and taught in public schools for a few years, and then fairly quickly moved into college education. There's a small college here in Oskaloosa, William Penn University. And so worked there for several years, and then went back into public education a couple of years before starting a business with a couple of other folks that I knew from William Penn. So I still do some part-time teaching at the college, but am a business owner, partner, and so that takes up a fair amount of time.
Mm-hmm. What's your business?
It's actually web development and IT support. We've done a little bit of digital printing, but we've kind of rolled that into a separate business, shipping and printing. So I'm sort of out of that one a little bit. So
well, that makes sense because looking at your website, nicely done, and I guess that would suggest that you are a professional at it. And there aren't a lot of congregation sites that have the kind of the rich graphical feel that Grace Wells.org has. So what do you do in the church there?
At the church, we moved our membership. We were actually LCMS folks, been raised that way, baptized years ago, and joined the Wells Church here about 10 years ago.
Okay.
Done quite a few things in there, whether it be financial secretary, treasurer, Sunday school teacher, elder. So, and then helping out with technology on the side, sort of. So, little bit of everything.
Okay, very entrenched there. Great, that's awesome. That's a great story. So we visited your congregation website, again, grace-wells.org, and wanted to hear a little bit about what's kind of behind-the-scenes story. How long has it been up? You know, the platform, you know, where did, is this its initial version or kind of its history a little bit and then your involvement in it?
Well, this isn't the the original or the initial site. Grace is a fairly small congregation, about 170 souls. And so they really hadn't thought too much in terms of electronic communications and how to spread the word with digital technologies. And we're fairly slow in adapting. And I'm not a by any means a person that pushes. Definitely someone who, you know, works with the folks there and what they'd like to see. So I kind of let a few of the families and a few of the other family congregational members sort of tell me what it was they wanted to do, and they knew that that was the business I was in. So we kind of approached it from that. One of our members, Dave Pfeiffer, has a son who's became a pastor and is out in the Henderson, Nevada area. And so he kind of mentioned to his dad maybe it'd be a good idea to do more with web technologies for the church here in Oskaloosa. And so that sort of got it going. And then we purchased an initial domain, and the initial site was just a static site done in Rapid Weaver, which is a Mac product that I had. And so we just put up some basic information. But as you know, the static sites tend to fall behind. And so, and that's kind of what happened to us. I think it's probably a typical story for a lot of websites, not just church websites, that they start out, you know, or they did start out static and sort of fell by the wayside. And, you know, when you got the urge, you would spend several hours and update it, and then it would sit there for months. So.
So when you decided to switch to the Joomla platform, you know, what was involved in the setup? Obviously, you've got some web development talents. Did it take a lot to customize the software to get the look that we're seeing now on the website?
Yeah, not a lot of work. The background there is really AeroQuick, the name of our business here in town. We were doing a lot of the custom MySQL PHP work, and we're blessed in Oskaloosa to have a private business that decided they wanted to bring fiber internet to town for communication purposes about 13 or 14 years ago. And they've, over the last, over the last 5 to 6 years, they've built out the fiber so that, you know, we have fiber to the homes here and fiber
Holy
to the business. Yeah, yeah.
Boy,
and so, I mean, that's...
I'm going to retire to Oskaloosa, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's a blessing, you know, for the community, just because some fairly large businesses needed to have that for, you know, to make their businesses grow and whatnot. So, and to be honest, you know, 15 years ago, even at William Penn, all we had was a 56K direct line to Iowa State, and, you know, everybody was on dial-up, and so it's made a huge difference in terms of, you know, what people can do and whatnot. So at that point, anyway, this company decided, you know, and we got into talks with them that they could host websites, and since we really, if we could do it locally, why should we, you know, try and host externally with some other service provider. So they operate their services on a what's called the LAMP model, which is Linux and Apache and MySQL and PHP. And so that's sort of where we put our business stake, so to speak, in terms of web development, I suppose 8 years ago. And so we also evaluated like products, Community Weaver, Joomla was one, obviously. And other products to kind of determine, you know, the things that we thought would help with customer websites. And so we had some experience with that. My wife teaches at a public school here just north of Oskaloosa, and they did their website in Joomla before actually we converted the church website. So we had some experience with that, and it seemed to be the reasonable way to go. And so that's the direction we moved, was with Joomla. because we had experience and because we were using it with other customers. So
the design itself, is that a custom design that you developed for the church, or is that a template that Joomla has?
It is a template. If a customer on the business side wants custom, and usually they do, then we do that. But yeah, for the church side, I was going to be primarily responsible, and it could be awful time consuming.
Well, for sure, yeah.
So
it looks nice. I mean, it does not look like a cookie cutter,
right,
template, and I think it fits the tone that you want to share with a church visitor, kind of rich colors and visually appealing.
Yeah. Well, we looked at a site actually, and there's links at the bottom of the site for, I did a search on Christian, basically Joomla templates, and there's a site, Christian Templates Online.
Oh, yeah.
And so we were able to, I was able to, go through that and take a look at that. And I passed some ideas along to some people at the church and said, what kind of colors and things do you like and whatnot. And granted, I didn't get a whole lot of feedback. I think people are a little shy about that, but a few people said, yeah, I kind of like this look and whatnot. And so that's how that came about. And they're pretty reasonable priced. I think we paid $60 or $65 for the template. And the templates come with the Photoshop headers and all the graphics, so they're all customizable. You just have to use Photoshop or your favorite editor for graphics and deal with that. And so that's how we modified the template to fit ours in this particular case. So
now that you've been down this path, maybe we can learn from your experience with Joomla. Are there specific things that you consider to be great strengths, particularly for church websites? And did you find anything lacking the software that you wanted to put or integrate with your site that you could?
I don't know that there are several good choices. For instance, I know Synod is using Drupal, right? And we've looked at Drupal too, I know, for some internal things. And, I don't remember the the criteria list and how we determined, one over the other. But I think, there are two or three, four very good ones, Drupal being one of those, and Joomla. Our company uses WordPress, for instance, to do its website. So it's not like we pick one necessarily over another. And they all seem to have strengths and weaknesses. I don't know that Joomla is necessarily, it's easy. I think that we determined it would be a little bit easier to work with Joomla than Drupal in this particular case. But, that's neither here nor there. I think that if someone wants to make it work and they're comfortable with it, I think it's the level of comfort. But Joomla is not difficult. I don't know that you don't need a computer science degree, but if you're a technology person and have a good understanding of technology, I think it's a fairly easy site type of system and platform to work with. So
hopefully we have a few technology people listening to
our
podcast today.
You would hope, right?
Right. Yeah, and I think WordPress is in there. There's a few others that I think are kind of all in that same bucket, that if you've got some technical skills, you could put together a pretty decent site. But there's always going to be challenges with whatever technology that you pick. What's been the reaction by the church members themselves or visitors?
Well, I think good. We've had a few people that have, been able to contact the church who are moving into the area. Not a lot, but they can find who we are and phone numbers and contact people, which is good. Probably the biggest feature that I think people use it for, to be honest, is audio sermons, and we sort of got that rolling at about the same time we redesigned the site, and I've been taking the opportunities during worship to just put the laptop up there and connect into the audio system and record Pastor Newman, and then of course do a little editing and put it up that afternoon. So that's probably the most popular part of it. There's a Google Calendar that actually Sally kind of helped me with a few bugaboos to and ideas, and we got that integrated. So those are probably the two big areas that. Probably go to the home page and see what the news stories are. So,
looks like Pastor Newman
Yes.
There also contributes content to the site?
Well, I help him.
Okay.
Until we can sort of bring him along a trail. He's a good, fairly good computer user, and he does send out, what he does is sends out email. We have a very good, now in the last year or two, a good email list. And so he sends out his information via email, and I just copy and paste it in and put his name on it. We've gotten a few of the younger congregational youth to get involved, and the youth group leaders were planning on anyway a session or two when they meet. I think once a month on Sunday evenings for youth get-togethers to have a session where they can learn about it. Because I'd really like to get them involved, and I know that's the kind of thing that they would really thrive on. So. Mm-hmm. But my wife does a little bit of contribution for Ladies Aid, LWMS, and that type of thing. So, and then we try to link in as much of the RSS feeds as we can, and try and tweak those. So I know there's a few congregational members that enjoy that, so they can get to it at one site, and if they need to, they can always link off of that and get to the main site of where that information is coming from. So.
Yeah, I'm very impressed. You really try and link to a lot of different resources. You have pastor blogs there, other Wells weblogs, other Wells websites, and you're obviously have the Wells logo right up there at the top. I think that's a great thing. And again, you're allowing the visitor to grab all kinds of different content that may help them in their, you know, in their life of faith. So that's very cool.
We hope so. And like I say, there's always a constant tweaking. I know some of the, if there's any downside, you know, certain templates, you know, they don't fit exactly with some of the RSS feeds that come in. And so there's a little bit of a tweaking there. And or if an RSS feed changes addresses or URLs, then there's a little bit of tweaking to do. But yeah, overall, it seems to work pretty well, I think.
Very good. Well, our compliments to you on the work you've done there. Is there any parting words, anything that you know now that would be a help to someone if they're just tackling a church website or a redesign of their church website?
Well, I definitely think the dynamic, the content management systems seem to be the best way to do that with a minimum of hassle. You get obviously the best of both worlds, a little less work on the publishing side of things. If it was static, it would be more work. And the content management systems are pretty mature now, really. And so there's plenty of help, obviously, out there. If people have questions and whatnot, they can contact folks like us and ask questions. And I think it's pretty straightforward. Again, our congregation is—it's not a technical congregation. You know, we're in rural Iowa, and while folks use their computers for email and for normal things and whatnot, and so we don't push it on them. Whatever they ask for, you know, if they like it, we try and help. And if that helps them in their faith life, then that's what we're all about. So.
Very good.
It looks like you've got a celebration coming up later in the year. Your congregation's celebrating 65 years.
Yep, 65 years. So, and Pastor President Schrader will be coming down. I do believe that Pastor Newman and Pastor Schrader went to school together. So there's a link there.
Okay.
A Wells connection. Imagine that.
Well, in Iowa, that's a little tricky sometimes. You know,
right.
We're a little out here, and so we don't always have the luxury of knowing people as well. So that's a nice connection to have, and of course I've been to New Ulm the last year or so and working on Wells teacher certification. So I'm beginning to really appreciate a lot of the resources and the wonderful people. So
wonderful. Well, very blessings good on that celebration and your continued work there in the congregation and on this website too. We'll keep an eye on it. It looks like a great sample site that we can direct people to, is a great example of how to use the existing technologies to serve the Lord. Thanks, Perry, for joining us and for your continued listenership.
You bet. Yes. Thank you, Martin, and thank you, Sally, both for the work that you do with Wellstep.
Our pleasure. Thanks. Thanks again to Perry for joining us on the show. He's a frequent contributor and a longtime listener. It was good to get him on the show.
Yeah, and it was awesome that he shared the link to the ChristianTemplatesOnline.com website, where you can see examples yet again of some great templates, designs that you may want to consider for your church website.
Mm-hmm. So thank you very much, Perry, for sharing that and for giving us a little bit of your time, and blessings on your work there in Oskaloosa, Iowa. I like saying that name, Sally.
Yeah.
Oskaloosa, cool. Iowa. I feel like Chris Schenkel or, no, who's... Who was also the announcer that, is it Chris Jackson? Not Chris Jackson. Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
Yeah, there you go.
That's right. I don't know, it just sticks in my head. Let's move on to news in tech. What's up in the tech world?
Exciting news came out last week that Skype will be unveiling a new public beta this week, mm-hmm. and it's going to add a huge feature, group video calling.
Up to five, yeah.
Up to five-way video calling using Skype. So that may be a solution for a lot of people doing any type of long-distance contacts. You know, obviously, family contacts across the distances is a great example, but for us in ministry settings...
I think there's some real ministry applications here.
Yeah, to connect with missionaries, connect with your distance Bible class attendees, that kind of thing, and actually add that component of video conferencing. That's a huge leap forward.
I will be very interested to see how well this works. Now, I was looking for this to be available already, but I don't see the beta out there yet. So I'm very eager to give this a try and see how well they implement it, because Skype does a nice job with video and audio right now. When they actually complicate things a little bit and take, this is kind of the next level for them, I'm really curious to see how performance will be. You know, I think of people like Gonzalo Degadillo, who uses Skype all the time for his ministry, his online ministry, how this could be a real blessing to allow more than just the one-to-one. Now, they've always had, well, not always, but recently, for the last year or so, they've had one-to-one video, but never group video. So we'll see how this goes, and it'll be interesting to hear from people like Gonzalo and see how well it works in a ministry context. But I think that's great news, and even better news is that I believe this will still be free, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, I'm reading an article about it now, Martin, and it says it will be free at first, but Skype has plans to bundle it with upcoming features and eventually, in 3 or 4 months' time, charge for the additional functionality.
Okay, so, well, we'll see what that additional functionality is. Maybe there will be a remnant that will be continue to be free, which would hopefully be the five-way video. So, very cool.
They do say that it's going to be in beta for PC users only.
Gotcha.
They are developing a Mac version for later this year.
Mm-hmm. So, we'll keep an eye on that, and maybe we'll give you a follow-up report. But I think there's definitely potential there. And that's definitely where the industry is going, too, just not just the audio, but the video is an important component. So, make sure you get your webcams ready and... Mm-hmm.
Get the curlers out of your hair. You have curlers in your hair, Martin?
I
Maybe
wish.
All right.
Picks of the week. What's your pick this week, Sally?
I guess I'm up, and I'm going to point you to a new resource from one of my favorite blogging teachers, and that's Richard Byrne. He's actually a teacher out in Massachusetts, I believe, and he does a free technology for teachers blog. I think I've made that one of my picks in the past. Mm-hmm. It's free tech, the number 4, teachers.com. And he's really kind of set the standard. I think he's won the EduBlog Award for 2 years running for the best resource sharing blog. So I'm just amazed at the things that he's able to find and share on his blog. He usually posts, you know, 3 or 4 things a day, just new, wonderful resources for teachers to use for all kinds of technology integration in the classroom. And most recently, one of the things that Richard does is some free ebooks that he shares on his website. He has a variety of them posted out there. Last week, he released a brand new one called Making Videos on the Web, a Guide for Teachers. And actually, it could be a guide for anyone. It's a really great, comprehensive guide. It's very simple and straightforward to make your way through the resources he's sharing. He uses a lot of screenshots and things to kind of hold your hand and walk you through. And he covers everything from copyright issues with Creative Commons and other things like that, fair use, how to find images and audio, how to edit audio using Audacity, how to make picture slideshows, animated videos, and full-length videos. And then he even gets into screencasting a little bit, being able to demonstrate things from your computer. It's about 28 pages long and very thorough, but also not intimidating. A really well-laid-out document that any teacher or anyone who wants to make videos on the web would find to be a good resource. And Richard makes it available for free on his blog. We'll have a link to it in the show notes. And, you know, as you're checking that out, maybe you want to also look at some of his other free guides, including Google for Teachers, a free guide to technology integration, Google Earth across the curriculum, and beyond Google. And so lots of great resources that he shares there, and we'll have links to all that in the show notes.
Very good. Sounds like a real valuable tool, especially for teachers. So
yeah.
All right, my pick is another hardware pick, and some of you, in fact, more and more of you are living in areas where there is legislation being passed that prohibits the use of your cell phone without a hands-free method in your vehicles. So you can't put your cell phone up to your ear. They're not prohibiting, at least in most cases, they're not prohibiting using your cell phone, but you have to be in a hands-free mode. Fortunately for a lot of us, we have cell phones now that support earpieces that are kind of Bluetooth, and many of them are Bluetooth enabled. And I wanted to highlight one that I've been using here for a little bit called the Jawbone Icon headset. It's made by Alif, A-L-I-P-H. We'll post a link to a CNET review in the show notes. But it costs $99, but what I really like about it is, you know, you've got good talk time, you've got real crystal clear audio, and it's very small. So you put it in your ear. It's got an over-the-ear clip, but it also has an earbud attachment that you can just throw it in your ear, not throw it, but place it in your ear. And it senses that it's on your ear, and then it's got a little nub on it that touches your cheek, which I think gives it a nice crystal clear way for when you're speaking. The people that I've been speaking with have felt that they couldn't tell the difference between having the earpiece in and having the cell phone next to my mouth. So I think that's obviously a great feature. It's, as I mentioned, it's Bluetooth. It also has A2DP enabled, so that if you have an MP3 player that supports it, which my iPhone does, you can also listen to a podcast or music through that same earpiece. So that's kind of a nice benefit. And when you it announces the caller in your earpiece, so it'll announce the phone number. Or if you've got the number attached to a contact, it'll announce who the caller is. And that's kind of neat. And you just press a little button, and the call starts and stops. It's got a little charger that comes along with it, a USB-based charger, so you can charge it on your computer, or there's a wall charger as well. But real simple device, but I think one that's going to, I think most people are going to find more and more necessary as these laws come into effect, that you're going to have an earpiece that both stays in your ear and also that you can hear sometimes in a noisy environment. So this is the Alif, or Aleph, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, Jawbone Icon headset.
And Martin, you didn't mention how stylish you are when you have one of these. I think my son would be excited because you'd look like the Borg from Star Trek.
But, yes, know, I usually don't walk around. Earlier. I usually don't walk around the mall or the street with this in my ear, but
okay.
It is in my pocket if the phone does ring, or obviously in the car. This is a great device. So, the only negative is it's so small that I think you could probably lose this if you don't keep your eye on it. So, which is maybe the good news, bad news of the whole thing. So, it's worth a look, and I think call clarity is probably the real winner here, because you obviously don't want to fight with that in an earpiece like this.
Sure. All right, well, we're gearing up for some exciting summertime events associated with the WellSec podcast. Maybe we should talk about those now.
Mm-hmm. So what do we
All
got?
Right. First up, we wanted to mention that we are planning a road trip this summer, a virtual road trip. We are going to be visiting all the corners of the U.S., hopefully, and finding out what's going on in congregations and schools along the way. And we invite our listeners to be part of our road trip. We would love to talk to you about technology in your congregation or school. Perhaps you're having particular success with an email newsletter or a blog or wiki in your classroom. Or maybe you're doing live streaming and have some tips to share with our listeners. Please send us your ideas, and we'll add you as a stop on our Google Map, and looking forward to a fun summer with that.
Yeah, what we'd like to do is get an entry from every district, which would cover the U.S. We could certainly take foreign entries as well, because we always love to hear from our missionaries or those people working in foreign mission fields. But we have 12 districts across the Synod, so we would look for maybe 12 entries, and not that we couldn't have two or three from the same district. But so those of you in across any area of the Synod, we would love to hear from you. Maybe you're doing, maybe you're using Skype in some fashion for Bible study or some other ministry capacity. Let us know. Even if we've talked about it on the show before, I think this is a good kind of year in review or so, something like that, that we're featuring real life uses of technology in ministry. So
right, and I'm hoping it'll be a real practical, step by step here.
Right.
Here's the tools we use and how we do it, so that people can get some, kind of step by step instructions to maybe do some of the same things in their church or school.
Yep, very good.
So, also coming up this summer, Martin, we're gearing up for more Final Web training. We mentioned Final Web earlier in the show, and we love to get together with those users out there and do some face-to-face training. There's nothing like being able to demonstrate things and ask questions in a face-to-face setting. And you and I are going to be doing that the week of July 19th, a one-day session, Final Web for Teachers. And then a three-day session, Final Web for Dummies, which is geared more toward the all-encompassing kind of webmaster view of the site, where we kind of start from the beginning and go through every functionality that you can have on your Final Web website. So check out the links in the show notes to those two training sessions that are coming up. We'll be doing it in Milwaukee and in New Ulm, Minnesota, so hopefully close enough that you can attend one of those.
And the three-day is broken up into discrete segments, one for beginner, then we have intermediate and advanced. So if you're if you just want a piece of those, then you can just attend a day or 2 days, something like that. Or if you can know the beginner stuff, just come for the intermediate or the advanced day. So it's structured that way.
Yep. Hopefully to fit everybody's needs.
Right. Something for everybody, as they say.
There you go.
Community feedback. Who's talking to us, Sally?
Well, got a fun comment from John Shoesmith, who's out at Redeemer in Yakima, Washington. And Martin, he was following up on our iPad conversation in our last podcast. And I think John had a great idea. What did he ask you there, Martin?
I think he was interested in if we had some kind of giveaway for our listeners.
Yeah. Maybe just some beta testing with iPads for all the WellSec listeners?
Yes, that's
right. What do
right.
you think?
We'll get right on that, John.
Yeah.
Just stay tuned.
Yeah. I did hold an iPad this week for the first time.
Did you?
thought it was kind of large after being an iPod Touch user. It was kind of strange to have that big device.
A little heavy, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely has a lot of advantages. I could see a lot of cool things with the iPad for sure.
So you must have been in an Apple store. Or
was
it a friend?
I was at a Best Buy. Yeah.
Okay, all right.
So, next up, we had some comments from Jason Schmidt. First off, we wanted to mention and include a link in the show notes to Microsoft Mouse Mischief, which is a really cool concept. He actually sent us this comment a week or two ago, but I wanted to have a little time to check it out before we talked about it. And really impressive. It's free software for Microsoft, and it allows the students in your classroom to use a wireless mouse and interact with your PowerPoint. So you can include things like questions and polls and drawing activities. And as they're sitting at their desk and you're projecting your PowerPoint with these things, there can be 30 mouse cursors on the screen as they're working.
Mouse
with your
cursors
slide.
Or mice cursors?
Okay, one of those.
There's a lot of mice. Meese.
Yes, it is. And hopefully you're not scared of them. But anyway, check out the link. It is PC only. Something about Microsoft made me guess that would be the case. But you'll be impressed with this Microsoft Mouse Mischief.
So what's the application? How would this benefit somebody, a teacher in a classroom?
Just allowing the students to actively participate in the lessons.
So they're collaborating on something on screen, clicking, moving, whatever.
Interacting, maybe taking a poll. Maybe the poll is, you know, what's the answer to this math problem?
Gotcha.
And they, you know, so they have some great demo videos and things like that. So I think if you're in a PC world and you're willing to try this out, we'd love to hear how it's working for you in your classroom. It looks like pretty cool technology.
Yeah, thanks, Jason.
Yeah. Next up, Jason tweeted a question for us, actually, Martin. He said, when's the next EduTech conference? Might be a good time for a WellsTech tweet up, or face-to-face meeting of all the WellsTech tweets. Do you have any scoop on a upcoming EduTech conference?
I don't. EduTech actually preceded me here at the Synod office, and maybe I don't know if it preceded you, Sally, or not, but we had a combo National Teachers Conference and Technology Conference that was up in Oshkosh, and that was kind of EduTech-y.
That was actually the only EduTech. To go back in history, there were two WellsTech conferences.
WellsTech, right, that's right. That's right.
And then right around the time that you started and I'd been on board for about a year, there was an EduTech conference in Oshkosh. I think both of you and I attended that one. But,
right. So we don't have one planned right now, but I'm open to the suggestion.
Maybe it's a good time to think along those lines.
I think there would be, especially with the advent of this podcast, we probably have an audience that might be interested. And maybe if just for nothing else, getting together. You know, the group of WellsTech listeners, we have a pretty good audience at this point, and we might be able to do something. But if any other listeners are interested, let us know that too. If we've got enough interest, I think we could make a go of it.
Nothing like face-to-face interaction and actually watching each other demonstrate the cool technology we talk about all the time.
Absolutely.
Jason also included a link for WellsTech to more Google resources, and it's actually a wiki all about using Google in the classroom. The Googly Moogly Google tools for the classroom. So check it out if you are a teacher and looking at maybe using Google Docs, Google Reader, Google Images, iGoogle, all those different tools for your classroom. Mm-hmm. Thanks for those links, Jason. And another WellsTecher had some links to share as well. Martin, you were pretty prolific in sharing some cool links this week.
Digo is how I share links, and so I popped a couple in there this past week that I thought would be of interest. One harkens back to a conversation, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, where we had kind of some sad news that Ning, which is an ad hoc social networking tool that anybody can begin their own social network with, was discontinuing their free service. But what we did find is that they've added a kind of a free Ning service just for teachers, which is good news that teachers can now set one up for their, I think this is primarily for classrooms, not for networking among teachers, but for a social network for a classroom. Isn't that right, Sally? I think you looked
That's
at
right.
this a little bit.
Yeah, geared toward the Ning Mini, they call it. So a small setting that they will make free for teachers to use in the classroom.
Okay, so it's some concession. Yeah.
Yep.
And then I also talked about, I also came across an article, and this is right up your alley, Sally. iPads embedded in kitchen cabinets. Now, you had a similar DIY project maybe last year where you installed a laptop in your kitchen. This is kind of similar, except they carved out a little hole. There's a video on this. It's pretty cool. That exactly matches the iPad. It looks pretty nice, actually. So you've got this iPad sitting behind the cabinet and kind of peeking through this hole that you've created. And I can see all kinds of uses for that kind of thing in the kitchen, whether it be for recipes, web surfing, music, you know, whatever it is. They've hooked it up to speakers, so it's kind of their own little kitchen entertainment system. Really cool.
Yep, and I guess I could give a follow-up report on our under-the-counter laptop. We have enjoyed it for over a year now, and it's still going strong, and it is exactly as you describe, a kitchen entertainment center. We have, you know, music CDs burned to it. We are able to surf the internet, and when we're not doing any of that, it's our digital picture frame because of our screensaver, you know, scrolling through.
Cool.
So it's a multifunctioning device. I'm not sure I'd buy a brand new iPad and put there. It happened to be an old laptop that had kind of seen its better days and worked well in this kind of basic setup, but if I had an iPad, I'm not sure I'd be attaching it behind my kitchen counter. But to each his own. And,
that's right.
And more power to the do-it-yourselfers. Cool. A lot better than the videos I've seen where they're putting them in blenders. Have you seen that?
Oh, they always do that with
they
the iPhone or iPad or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah.
So,
all right.
Better.
And I had one final link. How nonprofits are using social media for real results. I think that's a question that is a burning question that every church or school is asking itself. How do we use social media for ministry purposes? And then while this isn't specific to ministry, it's more about nonprofits, it does kind of give a good review of the social networks that are out there and some of the tools that might be useful to promote your cause, as they would call it. So take a look at that link as well.
And last up in community feedback, not necessarily feedback we received, but we noticed one of our community members was in the news, per se, and that is Christ the King down in Palm Coast, Florida, where Pastor Phil Huebner is. And Phil's been on our show as an interviewee and has contributed at various times as well. And he was recently featured in an article on the Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary website, you know, just kind of exploring what it was like to get the call 3 years ago to start a brand new congregation that didn't even have a name at the time. And they are in the process of finishing up their brand new building, and they have a thriving preschool program with plans to add grades in the years to come. And it's just a really neat perspective to hear from Phil about how God has blessed their work down in Palm Coast. So check out that link in our show notes.
Very good. And if you would like to contribute to the show, many, many ways to do that. The best way to find out all of those avenues, those channels that you can connect with us, is by going to the website wellstech.wells.net. And you'll see all the many ways that we can hear you. If you want to leave a voicemail, there's a phone number there, email. There's a listserv that you can take advantage of, all kinds of ways. So wellstech.wells.net's the place to go. Next week, Sally, is Mac Week. We've never done this before. I'm kind of excited about this.
I'm kind of nervous about it. I have an iPod Touch. That's as far as my Apple experience goes.
We're going to call this Max in Ministry. We have an interview with a pastor who is a Mac enthusiast and has some ministry tools that he's been using, kind of the Mac equivalent of Logos. That he's been using for a number of years. So we're going to talk with Pastor Steve Bauer about his use of the Mac in ministry, and we'll just have a nice conversation about our friend the Mac and all things Apple as it relates to ministry. Maybe we'll even have a little iPad conversation. So
imagine that.
Come back right next week. Even if you're not a Mac enthusiast, it's good to give the Mac users a little love once in a while as well. So. All right, let's close the show with the music of Revelation, their song Three Men on a Mountain from their album Once for All. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Please come back next week.
Three men on a mountain, up on Calvary, and the man in the middle was Jesus. He died for you and me. Now the man on the left was a sinner, tied to a cross he bled. He could have been forgiven, but he mocked the Lord instead. You say you are the Son of God. They nailed you to a tree. Come down and save us, if God your Father be. Three men on a mountain, up on Calvary, and the man in the middle was Jesus. He died for you and me. Now the man on the right was a sinner too.
Sorry for his sins,
he begged the Lord's forgiveness. And Jesus said to him, Fear not this earthly death. Before this day is o'er, you'll be with me in paradise on heaven's golden shore. Three men on a mountain,
Up on Calvary,
and the man in the middle was Jesus. He died for you and me. He and the man in the middle was Jesus. He died for you and me.